KPBS On Demand is supported by the Del Mar Wine and Food Festival, happening October 2nd to 7th. Founded in partnership with Alex Morgan, Drew Brees, and Rob Machado, the festival gathers chefs from San Diego and national TV, plus athletes and culture icons. Tickets at delmar.wine.
Good morning, I'm Debbie Cruz. It's Wednesday, August 28th. The debate over police chases continues, following three deaths this month. More on that next, but first, let's do the headlines. Local leaders are joining calls to add warning labels on social media platforms. County supervisors passed a resolution calling for social media warning labels in a 3-2 vote yesterday. It comes after U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy issued an advisory on the effect social media has on the mental health of young people. The resolution directs county litigators to explore legal actions against social media companies for their addictive algorithms. This week's weather has been pretty calm, and starting today, temperatures will drop just a couple degrees in most areas. The National Weather Service says we can still expect normal temps for this time of year. Today in the inland areas, temps will drop into the low 80s, and by the coast and in the mountains, it'll be in the mid-70s. But in the deserts, it's quite the opposite. Temps will be increasing, and it's expected to reach 108 degrees. The 45th annual Holiday Bowl date is set. It will be on Friday, December 27th at Snapdragon Stadium. It's the first time the game will be held at Snapdragon, the home field of the Wave soccer team. The Holiday Bowl was played at Petco Park the last 2 years. The game will match top teams from Atlantic Coast Conference against current and former teams from the Pac-12. Last year, USC defeated Louisville, and there were more than 35,000 fans in the stands. Tickets for this year's game will go on sale to the general public next month. You can visit holidaybowl.com for more details. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
Hello, this is Dr. Michael Lalage, Medical Director and Chief of Staff for Kaiser Permanente San Diego. For more than 50 years, San Diegans have entrusted their health care to us. Our care and coverage connect to provide medical care tailored to each member. With our integrated network of primary and specialty care, we work together using evidence-based medicine to help deliver positive results. We believe in a healthy and engaged life with good beginnings and dignified endings. We believe that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness requires total health, including equal access to high-quality, affordable health care. At Kaiser Permanente, our cause is health. Our passion is service. We work to help make lives better. To learn more, visit kp.org/San Diego.
Two people were killed in a crash after a high-speed pursuit by the San Diego Police Department Monday night. Reporter Katie Heisen says that makes three SDPD chase deaths this month, while debate continues over the policy.
San Diego Police Chief Scott Wall says an officer tried to pull someone over for speeding, but they didn't stop. The officer pursued the car before deciding the chase was too fast and ending it. But the speeding car crashed into another police car with two responding officers. The two drivers died. On-scene TV reported the speeding driver was 14 or 15 years old, but Wall told reporters he could not confirm the age. Wall said the other officer was in intensive care.
Due to the enormity of this situation and all the emotion that's behind it, we requested the Highway Patrol come in to conduct an independent investigation.
Another SDPD vehicle pursuit killed two children in December. So the Commission on Police Practices reviewed the department's vehicle pursuit policy. They found most pursuits start for low-level violations, like speeding. Last month, they recommended SDPD only chase drivers suspected of violent felonies. The police union called the suggestion dangerous. Last week, another person died in an SDPD car chase after losing control of their vehicle. Katie Heisen, KPBS News.
The county has a new tool to help people find affordable housing. Reporter Katie Anasta says applications for three North County developments will open tomorrow.
A new interactive map shows the location, contact information, and income limits for affordable housing developments built with county funds. Kelly Salmons with the county's Department of Housing and Community Development says it will help potential residents see some of their options.
I think that it'll really help folks to say, oh, you know, maybe there are options in my neighborhood, or maybe there, you know, I would like my kids to go to live in this school district. Maybe there's options for me there. Or, you know, my mother would love to live closer to my family and her grandkids. Are there options for my mom in this part of town?
The County Board of Supervisors is considering requiring new developments in unincorporated areas to include affordable units. This week, they'll discuss how many units would have to be affordable and what incentives could help offset building costs. Katie Anastas, KPBS News.
The Olympics may be in our rearview mirror, but the competition is far from over. In fact, the Paralympic Games are now underway. The Paralympics are the biggest international multi-sporting event for athletes with disabilities. One of the events is wheelchair tennis. San Diegan Dana Mathewson is the number one ranked wheelchair tennis player on Team USA. Paris will be her third Paralympic Games. She spoke to reporter Angie Bowen.
So how does it feel to be returning to the Games this year? You racked up quite the accolades and accomplishments since Tokyo, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been a good couple years for me. It's weird that it's only been 3 years because normally it's the four, but with Tokyo getting postponed, this has come up faster than usual. But no, I'm really excited. I think people have asked me recently, like, oh, it's your third Games. Does the excitement level wear off, or does it just kind of feel like old hat to you now? And absolutely not. You know, it's different venues, different experiences, and I think any chance that you have to represent your country or wear a flag on your chest or, you know, USA on your back, it means a lot. So definitely very excited.
For someone who has never seen wheelchair tennis before, can you just describe the sport? What does it look like? And how do the gameplay and the strategy differ from the tennis that able-bodied athletes play?
So that's a great question. I think that wheelchair tennis is very similar to able-bodied tennis, which is what makes it unique in the adaptive or para-athletic type of world. So wheelchair tennis, the only difference is that we can have a second bounce as long as the first bounce is within the regulation court. And a lot of times in the recreational level, you might see people using that second bounce a lot, but at the professional level or the pros, they really don't use the second bounce at all. Unless someone hits a fantastic shot that we might take a second to get to. But in terms of the court size, the net height, the rackets that we use, the balls that we use, the way that things are scored, us having like ball kids or officials that sit in the umpire chair, all of that is exactly the same. And I think that's what makes wheelchair tennis so cool, and that it's very easy to really seamlessly integrate it with its able-bodied counterpart. Because at the end of the day, if you take away the fact that we're moving in a wheelchair versus moving on our feet, the tennis is almost identical. We might not have quite as much power on a serve or in some of our ground strokes just because we're not using our legs the same way that an able-bodied person would. But in terms of how I hit a forehand, how I hit a serve, volley, all of that, the strategy is tennis at the end of the day. Really, the only difference is that I'm moving around the court using a wheelchair. That's it.
The Olympics are a really big cultural phenomenon. They receive a lot of media attention. It's not the same with the Paralympics, unfortunately. What do the Paralympics mean to you, and how are you spreading awareness about these games?
So the Paralympics is the highest echelon of sport for anyone with a physical disability. And I think that's a message that I like to help educate others about. I think that a lot of people don't really know that the Paralympics exist, especially in our country, which is so sad. Like in the UK, they have like a whole TV channel for the Paralympics. Everybody knows what the Paralympics is over there. I've lived over there for a few years when I was studying, and anytime I had my tennis stuff, people would come up to me and be like, do you play at Wimbledon? Are you in the Paralympics? Like, everyone knew about it. And in the States, for some reason, that's not the case. And so I think I like to try to educate like what the Paralympics is, the fact that the para in Paralympics actually stands for parallel instead of paraplegic. A lot of people think that's what it means, but it stands for parallel because we run parallel to the Olympic Games. You know, it means a lot to me. It's been an event that has allowed me to represent my country, which is something that not many people can say that they've done. And so I think although the Paralympics is not yet as widely recognized as the Olympics, I think that it's on its way. I think I've seen a lot of growth in terms of recognition when a country hosts the games. Like I just spoke about the United Kingdom, and that really changed when they hosted London 2012. So I'm really intrigued to see what happens with LA 2028 and what happens, because the US is going to want as many Paralympians getting gold medals as possible, the same way they want Olympians getting gold medals. And that's going to mean funding. It's going to mean exposure. It's going to mean they're going to want crowds to come out and support. And so that's going to mean a lot more commercials. You know, it's going to be a roll-on effect. And I think that could have a really massive spread to what we were talking about earlier about people embracing para sport and athletes like myself. And yeah, I'm excited to see what will come in the next 4 years.
That was Dana Mathewson, who will be representing the U.S. at the Paralympics, speaking to reporter Andrew Bowen. SeaWorld San Diego yesterday returned 3 sea lions to the ocean. 2 of them were fur seals, a species that bounced back from near extinction. SciTech reporter Thomas Fudge was on the boat that released them. He has this story.
Our boat carried 6 people and 3 sea lions. SeaWorld says the animals had been found near death, then examined, fed, and nursed back to health. The fur seals were small juveniles. Jenny Smith, curator of SeaWorld's rescue program, says they are members of a species that almost disappeared until 2 were found in the 1950s.
They have a great comeback story. They were almost hunted to extinction for their fur. They have very luxurious fur, and they thought they were extinct. Scientists found a breeding pair off the Guadalupe Islands, and now there's about 31,000 of them.
Just youngsters now, the fur seals, a male and a female, are only about 40 pounds each. When they're full grown, the male will be close to 400 pounds. Caretakers are nervous and excited at the time they're released into the wild, but they did just fine, hesitating for a moment, then jumping into the ocean a couple miles off the San Diego shoreline. Thomas Fudge, KPBS News.
That's it for the podcast today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. Join us again tomorrow for the day's top stories. I'm Tepi Cruz. Thanks for listening, and have a great Wednesday.
KPBS On Demand is supported by the Del Mar Wine and Food Festival, October 2nd to 7th. Founded in partnership with Alex Morgan, Drew Brees, and Rob Machado, the festival gathers chefs from San Diego and national TV, a celebration of SoCal culture. Tickets at delmar.wine.